Welcome to The Signal, radio from journalism students at the University of King's College in Halifax. I'm Rose Murphy.
And I'm Simon Smith. This year, thanks to COVID-19, we're working remotely from all over the country. So, for our first show, we decided to take a look at some of the ways the pandemic has changed life, for better and for worse.
It's a strange time, but sometimes a crisis can make you try something new or find new ways of coping and adapting.
Right. For example, flu season occurs every year, and getting the flu shot is common practice for many Nova Scotians. But health officials say this year it is more important than ever due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And that may mean that pharmacies are busier than ever. Benjamin Roth explains.
Nova Pharmacy in Halifax is just one local pharmacy preparing to give out the flu shot this year. Flu season is arriving in a world already in the middle of a health crisis. Experts say the flu shot may be key to keeping a bad situation from becoming worse. Crystal Chalk is the pharmacy manager at Nova Pharmacy.
This year especially, since it's the first year having COVID-19 around, we don't really know if you get the flu and you get the COVID at the same time, or kind of even, you know, somewhere close to each other, then we don't really know what the outcome's going to be.
Pharmacies have become an important part of the effort to deliver the flu shot. According to the Pharmacy Association of Nova Scotia, 40% of shots last year were from pharmacies. People have been able to get the shot from pharmacies for 7 years. This year, it's a bit more of a production.
Once you're done here, everything gets wiped. So sanitized with rubbing alcohol, also wearing a mask, of course, gloves if necessary. So if people are interested in more protection from me or themselves, so I have goggles, I have gloves. If anybody requests anything, certainly we can do that.
And with people being encouraged more than ever before to get the flu shot, Chalk says it could be busier than usual.
I expect more, at least people calling about it, so whether or not people will actually show up and have it done. But I know just with the recommendations from Health Canada and the concerns around COVID, I do expect more.
The combination of more cleaning, less room due to social distancing, and more demand also has an effect on distribution.
Just be prepared to wait a little bit longer, so have a little bit of patience with your pharmacy.
Chalk says that part of the expected rush at pharmacies is because they are picking up the slack from doctor's offices that aren't taking as many patients as normal. She suggests calling ahead. For The Signal, I'm Benjamin Roth.
COVID-19 has been tough for many people this year. It's also been hard on zoo animals. Around the world, some zoos have shut down. Others are struggling to feed their animals. But there's one zoo in Nova Scotia which is defying the odds and surviving with the help of the local community. Zarnagar Khan has more.
Want another one?
It's snack time for the two lions, Stork and Naya. The large felines are eating raw meat from Gail Rogerson's hand this sunny afternoon.
Here. There, now you can see his teeth a little bit.
Rogerson runs the Oak Lawn Farm Zoo. She says it was hit hard when the pandemic shut everything down. But Rogerson says Oak Lawn had something special, help from local community.
Well, our biggest expense are the wages for the staff. And then after that would be feeding the animals, and then all the maintenance and repairs and all that stuff.
Other zoos struggled during the pandemic too. The Cherry Brook Zoo in St. John, New Brunswick had to close after 46 years of operation. The zoo in Toronto and Calgary are struggling to feed their animals.
People love science.
Rogerson says she is very fortunate, as people bought full season passes despite the season being so short.
Local farms around, if they have surplus, they let us know and they'll bring it here. Farmer has an old horse that it's time for it to go. It comes here, we cut it in pieces and put it in the freezer, and that gives us lots of meat for the cats.
Jane Fitzgerald is a frequent visitor and one of the zoo supporters.
There's been GoFundMe pages to make sure that we all purchased to make sure that we kept the zoo afloat.
Mike Brobel has worked at the zoo for the past 20 years. At first, he was worried about his job. Now he's grateful for the way people in the area rallied around.
This year has definitely provided a lot of challenges for us at the zoo here. At the beginning of the whole pandemic, we didn't know, we were uncertain if we were going to open up. We didn't know where our income was going to come from. I guess our community was such a strong supporter of the zoo, and it really made us flourish in a time when we didn't think we could.
The zoo reopened in June following all the safety protocols. The gift shop remains closed, and Rogerson scales back the canteen. But that isn't keeping visitors away, and they seem happy with the one-directional zoo. For The Signal, I'm Zernika.
Social distancing has had big effects on how we do many day-to-day things. It's changed how we shop, how we meet friends or family, and how we work and learn. It's also changed the way journalists are doing their jobs. Michael Chubb spent some time with a reporter in Newfoundland and Labrador who's had to figure out how to get the story while keeping his sources safe.
Zach Gowdy is unpacking a bag of audio-video gear. Zach's a journalist and video producer with CBC St. John's, and is explaining how easy setting up a simple interview used to be.
Before the pandemic, you could just call a person up. I want to do a story about your thing. Let's meet at this place at this time. It could be their house. It was often their house.
But since March, that simplicity was replaced with new hurdles and added precautions.
And we can't do any of that anymore. No going in people's houses. No guests in the building whatsoever.
But even with social distancing requirements, creating more challenges and doing in-person interviews, Zach extends past it with increasingly common tools.
So, you know, you get your practical, if inelegant, tricks. Like, everybody has seen this now, the reporters with the journalism pole, they call it, right? You gotta have your journal.
But while Zach's been doing in-person interviews again recently, that wasn't the case at the beginning of the pandemic.
For myself, that meant, you know, the kind of videos that I was producing, it wound up being that I would connect with people on Skype or FaceTime on my
But as a video producer, Zach needed to get some footage of his subjects doing whatever it was they were talking about.
Over the phone. So I could ask somebody, you know, after we do this little interview, could you take a picture or take a video of yourself playing that song or making that craft or doing your thing? And then 10 minutes later, bam, like it would arrive in my phone. It's awesome. Sequence with lots of great shots in it. You know, again.
Scott Matthews, a professor of political science at Memorial University, says that the role of journalists is especially important during a public health emergency.
So in order to make informed decisions, we need people in our region or in our area giving us that information we need.
For The Signal, I'm Michael Chubbs in St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador.
Ann Perry isn't letting COVID-19 get in the way of spreading the word about a deadly cancer. The woman from Shelburne County has a personal stake in spreading information about colorectal cancer. Her husband died of the disease last year. Alex Guy reports.
Since her husband Toby's death, Ann Perry has become an advocate for colorectal cancer awareness and fundraising. She created her own Instagram page called Test for Toby and planned to organize her own run to fundraise in his name.
But then I thought, since they were doing the push for your torch, I would like to host a run myself in honor of him to raise awareness in our community and to raise funds for that.
Then the pandemic struck. She had to cancel the run. She wasn't the only one to feel anxious about the cancellations. Louise Wardrop from Colorectal Cancer Canada said the organization was in the same boat, but they were able to pivot around this problem.
But, you know, to look on the positive sides, it's also shifted our focus into, again, creating more awareness, reaching people outside of the city that might have had difficulty to actually come to one of our Push for Your Tush fundraisers. Now they have the opportunity to participate, to join us live.
Not unlike Colorectal Cancer Canada's solution, Perry decided she wouldn't allow the virus to derail her efforts. Instead of an in-person run, she pivoted to sharing more on social media to spread the message.
So the kids and I come up with Test for Toby, which was just wanting everybody to talk to your doctor and get tested. Don't wait.
She posts on Instagram because she says it's easy for people to use and she wants them to feel comfortable starting conversations about this cancer. For The Signal, I'm Alex Guy.
In the time of COVID, when most people were trying to get by, Vanessa Hartley found her voice. This year's Nocturne Festival gave Hartley a chance to say something she's been wanting to say for a long time. It's about her Black community in Shelburne and how it's affected by environmental racism. Nicola Sagan explains.
Vanessa Hartley joins an African drumming circle in Halifax's historic Black neighborhood on Gottingen Street. She's an eighth generation Black loyalist from Shelburne. She's come to the city to work on a video project for Nocturne Festival. Hartley is also a Black Lives Matter organizer. Her 10-minute spoken word and dance video is called Intercede. It's about the environmental racism faced by her community.
Currently, Shelburne has a Black community in the South End, and they had bypassed not only once but twice this community with the accessibility to town water. And this water is clean town water and it's drinkable. And our residents aren't getting that, and a lot of people are dying of cancer, multiple myeloma, and this is a very uncommon type of cancer. So it's very concerning that we have multiple elders in our community dying from this type of cancer.
Hartley's video will be part of the new COVID-19 version of Nocturne, aired almost completely online instead of on the streets of Halifax. Hartley hopes her video will help further spread the word of what's going on in Shelburne South End.
COVID almost was a blessing in disguise in terms of our project. It's helped us step out of our comfort zone. I feel that there's a lot to talk about in terms of Shelburne and a lot of systemic barriers and environmental racism.
Nocturne director Lindsay Corey agrees that even though Nocturne is online this year, the festival is an important platform for activists like Hartley.
We really feel at Nocturne that art can be a catalyst for connection, and through different types of work, through movement, through spoken word, there is an opportunity for people to connect on a deeper level with the problem at hand or with environmental racism or with experiences that are unlike their own.
COVID or not, the important thing for artists and activists is that their message is heard. You can catch Hartley's video, Intercede, anytime on the Nocturne website. For The Signal, I'm Nicola Sagan in Halifax.
You're listening to The Signal, audio journalism from the University of King's College. We're heard on CKDU, Dalhousie Campus Radio at 88.1 FM.
Our shows are also on SoundCloud. Search The Signal, a Halifax podcast. And you can check us out on Twitter, at SignalHFX.
A well-known food expert says COVID-19 means traditional butchers should be making some changes to their business models. The pandemic has driven the price of meat out of reach for some. In Southwest Ontario, one butcher added a plant-based program in his Chatham store just before the coronavirus outbreak. As Raghu Para tells us, he says he's now reaping the benefits.
Mark Romaldi says his Windsor-based Mr. Meat Market made the leap to a vegan fare just before the pandemic struck.
Well, we didn't anticipate COVID when we adopted this location. To develop a new store takes years in the making.
Romaldi has sold beef for over 15 years. He says pivoting to include plant-based food choices wasn't that hard and broadens his market.
We developed that store because it was something for everybody. Vegan diets and lifestyles have ever been growing, so we want to accommodate those people as best as possible.
Romaldi says plant-based consumption has been sprouting quickly, and that's at least partly because the pandemic has driven up the price of meat.
Beef prices started to skyrocket, then pork, then poultry. It went in that exact order.
Both the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and Canadian Cattlemen's Association reported the largest spikes on beef prices for consumers during COVID-19. And the costs aren't declining. Dr. Sylvain Chalboua is a lead author of Canada's Food Price Report.
Beef went up 25% this year. I mean, beef is a premium product. It's not accessible to a lot of people.
He says Canadians have historically been heavy meat consumers. And while that's great for the economy, he explains there's a fundamental problem with the socioeconomics of protein consumption.
Animal proteins for many immigrants are a luxury, really. With lentils or with pulses, you kind of democratize the meat counter, I guess. You make it more accessible to more people.
Shalbova says animal production will be challenged by the increasing demand for nourishment as more immigrants come to Canada. He says plant-based proteins can bridge that gap. For The Signal, I'm Raghu Para in Windsor, Ontario.
COVID-19 shut down team sports for months. Now, a volunteer-run organization called Halifax Plays is working to get the games going once again. As Leo Bui tells us, their soccer, softball, and volleyball leagues are back in full swing.
Jolanda Kumu, who is one of the organizers and also a player, is a mother of three children. She said the sport has made her feel better in every way.
This is the only night I have, the only 2 hours that I have to myself. This is my me time. And I find that when I was, during COVID, and I was home all the time, my stress level was way up. So this is a good de-stressor for me.
With certain safety regulations, Shitang Shu Roy is another organizer.
Each of our leagues have different ways that they make sure everything is tracked. So whether it's, you know, all the captains have to write the names of everyone who came and then send it to us, or maybe it's, you know, there's an electronic thing we use called Squad Fusion where people can put their online RSVPs. There's an app which we use for some leagues called Bloxo, which helps organize kind of managed drop-in programs where everyone needs to sign up and everyone needs to be accounted for before you're allowed to play.
Clementine Short is a regular player at the volleyball league.
It's important on so many levels for your physical health, your mental health, your just socializing. I mean, once a week is really a minimum. So just hoping that it stays like this.
For safety purposes, participants have to take extra measures during games. Players have to maintain their distances, sanitize their hands, or disinfect the ball in between games.
I find that it's a little time consuming.
Although strict guidelines and rules are in place, it does not deter people from coming out to participate.
I hope we're not going back to confinement and having to do sports in your living room. That's not fun.
A staple of the Halifax entertainment scene has been undergoing some big changes to adjust to the pandemic. As John Werbit tells us, the Derby Show Bar has replaced the Marquee Ballroom as a place to safely distance and catch live acts.
People line up at the door. The bouncer asks to see their ID.
John, just pull down your mask for a second.
Yeah. A year ago, nobody would think about leaving home with a mask in their pocket. Today, it's mandatory in most public places.
Sanitizer?
Shelly McPhail is manager of a connected local and Derby Show Bar. She's been working constantly to keep the place up to safety standards.
So we were able to build this like room just to fit shows. Everybody can see it, still be in the capacity that we're mandated to have, but still have like a cozy performance room.
With increased staff and decreased capacity, Shelly is getting by while creatively adding value for customers. From comedy to live podcasting and pop-up kitchens, sometimes together, Shelly and her staff are concocting unique and memorable experiences.
A lot of more reaching out, and it's not just music now. It's a whole visceral experience.
After a long, quiet summer, show season is in full swing. Victor Siborek is the owner. He used to be a set builder. He got to work early in the pandemic, maximizing space and putting in the new bar.
When we were shut down, I thought, well, the only thing to do is to get ready for the end of it. So I rebuilt, put a bar here, kind of remolded the place for socially distanced live music.
Inside the Derby, which has taken the place of the Marquee Ballroom, it looks like a prop house exploded. Bicycle parts, mannequin torsos, lamps, and paintings in every style. The place has got it all. Tonight's show, Forever North End 4, a collection of local Halifax talent. Halifax rapper Ghetto Sox is just glad to be back.
I'm okay with the restrictions and the safety precautions that are in place right now.
Caution inside the Atlantic bubble has made it one of the safest places in North America. People like Shelly are making the new normal here just a little bit livelier. For The Signal, I'm John Werbit.
First, they showed us how to be alone. Now, a Maritimes-based film production duo is helping people cope with social distancing required during the pandemic. Filmmaker Andrea Dorfman and poet-musician Tanya Davis's latest collaboration is called How to Be at Home. Chelsea Mahar has the details.
Andrea Dorfman is one of Atlantic Canada's best-known filmmakers. She and poet-musician Tanya Davis met 13 years ago. Since then, they've worked together and learned a lot about each other.
I would say collaboration is a cornerstone to our friendship.
Their collaboration How to Be Alone went viral on YouTube in 2010.
If you are, at first, lonely, be patient.
That poem led to their most recent collaboration called How to Be at Home. How to Be Alone shows Davis on screen, but Dorfman took a new approach for How to Be at Home.
Many people came to How to Be Alone a second time around during the pandemic, and some of them said to us, I love this poem, but we can't do these things anymore. And that really inspired Tanya, who was also isolated at home alone, to write a poem that really just addressed those issues so specifically. This time, Tanya was in PEI, I was here in Halifax. We couldn't get together.
So instead, Dorfman decided to use one of her other talents, animation. She drew scenes and pages like a book.
And as an artist, I think we're always looking out at the world and wondering how to interpret it.
Karsten Knox is a local journalist and film reviewer. He says the films are about being kind to yourself, especially during the pandemic.
I think that Andrea and Tanya's video is actually maybe the first piece, the first thing I've seen that really does respond in an honest and a wonderful way to what we're going through right now. It's the first piece of art that I've seen and gone, oh yeah, that's right. That's connecting me to this experience.
They've submitted the film to the National Film Board's Project The Curve, a series of work about the pandemic. You can find it in the rest of the project on the board's website at nfb.ca. Chelsea Mahar, The Signal, Halifax.
That's our show from Group 1 of the Bootcamp Audio Class at the University of King's College. I'm Simon Smith.
And I'm Rose Murphy. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned. Starting on Friday the 13th, we'll be producing a series of radio shows showcasing student journalism at King's. You'll be able to catch those on CKDU 88.1 FM on Friday mornings at 11.
Or you can listen to our work from the audio workshop next month on our SoundCloud page. Search us at The Signal, a Halifax podcast. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @SignalHFX. Talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.